The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Mint with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I've got the NFL app on right now because our TV may or may not be broken. We're not 100% sure on it. We're going to figure it out. I don't know. But I'm watching Bills Chiefs from last year, remembering the Bills were 6-6 at that point, and remembering how this game ends.
It was a dark time. I remember
It was not a good time.
Every day going in the playoff, New York Times playoff machine, and just being like, okay. What if this happens? What if that happens? What's the best and worst case scenarios for the next week?
In reality, all we needed was Miami to just completely fall apart.
As they do. Hey,
the Bills did their job.
They almost fell apart last night.
Almost fell apart last night. That game was awful.
Did you see that there was like, I mean, I was watching the condensed highlights, so I don't know if it was play after play after play, but I think there was like four plays in a row where it was just, every play was a turnover.
Yeah. It felt like it.
Pretty much?
Pretty much, yeah. It was
because there was an
interception to a fumble to then another fumble.
And then another interception.
I think so.
It's just, that's wild. And the Rams don't even score a touchdown.
But at that point, I did turn the game off. I was like, this is not worth it for me. This is just not it.
Yeah. Like I said, I watched the condensed version, so I didn't even see like most of the game. I saw like the highlights, I guess, if you want to call it that.
And
even
those would be considered lowlights. Right.
I mean, except for there was one where Jonnu Smith catches a ball over the middle and just trucks a dude.
Yeah.
Like, and that actually, no, it was right before the Tyreek Hill touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
He gets down to like the 1 yard line, and on his way, he trucks two or three guys and just, I'm not a Dolphins fan, but I'm kind of sad that he didn't get in there. Like, you deserve to score that touchdown.
Yes.
Like,
that's
crazy. And then for them to not give it to him on the next play, like,
it's
come on. He deserves that.
Hate to see it.
Well, you don't.
But overall, not a good game. Was not really a big fan of that game. But yeah, so I've got last year's Chiefs and Bills regular season matchup on the TV. I think Jeremy and Joe were also listening to it as well. And a lot of that is coming to sort of one of the topics I want to take from today, because I really, really liked Joe and Jeremy's conversation from this morning to the poll of, is this year's team the best team under McDermott and Allen? Because they, you know, record-wise, have the best start to the year at 8-2. Just spoiler alert, flat out for me, I said no. It's either 2020 for me. Me and Josh were talking here in the break, too. 2022 probably has a good shout. For me, though, I always just kind of remember the end of that season and just how much it felt like they were running out of gas. And then the Cincinnati incident with DeMar Hamlin, and then just kind of how that season ended really left a bad taste in my mouth overall. 2020, though, for me was just it felt like they were having fun. It felt like they were just toying with teams a lot of the time. They had made their ascension in 19, and then in 20, it was just, all right, here we go. Like, they're great. They're really good. And it was sort of also this weird feeling around the team because you didn't get the normal off season with them due to COVID. You kind of only got glimpses at them. You didn't really know what Cole Beasley and Stephon Diggs would look like together. You knew what Cole Beasley was because of 2019, but you didn't totally know what that was going to be. And then just all of a sudden, you know, that first Jets game, Allen's first 300-yard game, another 300-yard game, a 400-yard game. I mean, just it felt like, again, like they were toying with teams, and it was so much fun to watch. They were so good, and that was maybe the first time in my life as a Bills fan that it felt like, oh, so this is what all the 90s fans were talking about. Because up to that point, you know, you had 2019, but they were clearly limited on offense. I remember a lot of Bills fans wanting a shot at the Chiefs at that year if they had beaten Houston. And I was like, that's like the last thing I want. I don't think they're that good at all. I think they're getting there, but And at that time, too, the Chiefs were in the middle of their first juggernaut run and such. So there was a little bit of a weird feeling there. But 2020 was the first time I thought, oh, they're good, good. And then it's really kind of continued from there, where now I just have like a almost blind trust in this team to make the playoffs every year, to win at least a playoff game every year. I mean, they've been pretty darn good at that outside of 2019 and 2017 to win at least a playoff game. They've been great. They've been absolutely unbelievable. But they have not gotten over the hump. And that's sort of where, you know, at least the topic of discussion for me today. Josh is handling stuff on the board on the other side of here. We're kind of short-manned here. So Josh will be coming in and out. But it's really going to be time for all of us to kind of talk about this game coming up. Because the Colts, they beat the Colts, what have you. It is what it is. I think most of us thought that. We're all waiting for Kansas City. And there are some injury notes. Keon Coleman has already been ruled out with a wrist injury. We'll see about Amari Cooper. We'll see about Dalton Kincaid. They are going to come into this short man. But in terms of this matchup alone, really the question of the day for me, and we've already got some tweets. We'll get to those here in just a second. But has this regular season matchup with the Chiefs lost all of its luster, or is it still the quote-unquote game of the year contender for you? And the reason I ask that is because for the last few years, this has been a yearly game, whether it be in Arrowhead or now it's regularly getting to Orchard Park as well. It was always billed as like, that's the game. That's the litmus test until the playoffs. If you beat the Chiefs, it feels like the season is somewhat of a success until the playoffs. And that's been a big thing for me too. They beat them in the regular season. The game I have on, last year's game when they were 6-6, they beat the Chiefs. They will then ultimately lose to them in the playoffs, like many other years prior. The only game I can think of them losing to them in the regular season, I think was 2020 when that happened.
It was the COVID season.
Yeah, and
there was no fans. It was in Buffalo. So technically, last year was the first time Mahomes was here in Buffalo with fans. Remember that? That was the conversation. But when you look at this from a league perspective, if you're not a Bills or Chiefs fan, this is still the game of the year.
100%.
Because it's two incredible teams.
Yeah.
There's a lot on the line. And when you're looking at it from our perspective, too, there's a lot on the line. It's up for the one seed. But at the same time, I mean, we were talking about this before we went on the air. You can't. Like, you can get excited about this game. I'm not saying, like, I'm excited about it. It's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be high-powered offenses going against each other, against two, like, both teams have great defenses.
I don't even know if it's high-powered offenses for either of them.
That's fair.
They're both so wounded, they're like, let's just get through this.
On paper, they're high-powered offenses, but but my point is you get all the appeal if you're an out-of-town fan, but it also still means a lot for the Bills. Mm-hmm. In terms of the one seed.
Well, yeah. And
the only thing I'm really, truly excited for is, hey, if you win this, that really opens up the door for someone else, even if it's not you, for someone else to get the one seed.
Well, and that's really a big part for me, too, is the one seed is still live. It would have been much more live if Denver could not succumb to the Chiefs' devilry and witchcraft. But they don't, and now they're still undefeated. But yeah, I mean, if Denver had beaten them and you were looking at hey, both teams could be 9-2 if you win this game and you now got the tiebreaker over them, and then Baltimore and Houston have both lost recently, so you're ahead of them just on record alone. Yeah, but you still look at the Chiefs' schedule and you go, I just don't know where the losses are coming. Even with these one-score games, even how poorly they play, it seems like they just figure out a way to get it done. Except really against Buffalo in the regular season. Buffalo has had their number in the regular season for years now, and it's been an Arrowhead, to the point where I would argue most Bills fans no longer fear even going on the road there. Maybe argue some prefer it because the Bills the last 2 years have lost at home in the playoffs. I'm one of those. Like, I don't care about going on the road. For me, it's much more of the I want the bye rather than like home field advantage. Yes, is something I want the bye week
because that gives you extra. It gives you extra time to get healthy, and it gives you time to scout and things like that. Like, it's something the Bills haven't had in our lifetimes ever. No. I don't even know if they had it back. Did they have it in the four in a row days?
I think during a few of them, yeah, because you would still, it would still have been the 1 and 2 seed.
Oh, that's right.
That's the biggest difference now is it's no longer just now it is just the 1 seed rather than 1 and 2. And that's been a huge difference, and it's allowed the Chiefs to kind of, for some of these years when they've been the 1 seed, to go on a run.
It's almost like a monopoly, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have control over this regardless of it. And that's why I was saying, even if the Bills don't get the 1 seed, a win on Sunday could open up the door for other teams to get that 1 seed, which I don't know if I want the Ravens to have that, or, I mean, at this point, the Texans and the Bengals are kind of way out of that conversation. So
realistically, and I still think Baltimore's a very good team, if the Bills win on Sunday, it's between those two teams. It's between the Chiefs and Bills for the 1 seed.
Okay.
Just because I don't think Baltimore can make up enough ground, because I don't think the Bills or Chiefs, especially if Buffalo does win on Sunday, I don't think they'll lose enough games for Baltimore to ultimately overtake either of them.
Yeah.
And even honestly, with Baltimore having the head-to-head loss.
Right. And honestly, too, we look at the Bills' angle of this, obviously, because we're here. But if you look at the Kansas City angle of this, this is like the last hurdle for them, realistically.
To an undefeated season.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Like, this is it. If they get over the Bills, you basically just have to kind of sleepwalk for the rest of the season.
Put it in cruise control, stay healthy.
Yeah. Don't do anything stupid.
You're getting guys back, too. There's potential you're going to get Hollywood Brown back for the playoffs. Isaiah Pacheco coming back here, I think, in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So for them, it's also we're getting healthier. The whole thing, we can be undefeated going into the playoffs.
Because the end of the season for them is Panthers, Raiders, Chargers, should be all wins. Browns, Texans, Steelers, and then Broncos again. Like those 7 games after the Bills, except for the Steelers and maybe the Texans.
See, I'd say the Broncos, too.
You think the Broncos could do something?
Because that's going to be in Mile High, or not Mile High anymore, but it's going to be in Denver.
Yeah.
And they played them really well. I mean, they played them very, very well.
But I also...
That also could be for a playoff spot for Denver as well, so they might be coming in with some extra juice. You know what? Hearing that now, because I'm also starting to get more respect for the Steelers.
The Steelers are definitely in play there.
I mean, if sure, the Bills, Buffalo's probably the hardest game you have left.
If the Bills win this game... And the Steelers beat the Chiefs, which, from what they've shown the past few weeks, I think they could actually do for once, which is kind of crazy to say. And that could also be for a playoff spot for the Steelers, too. Don't forget. I mean, that could be something for the AFC North, potentially, if Baltimore keeps fumbling. But I just, man, like, looking at the end of the schedule, the next 3 weeks for the Chiefs, aside from the Bills, those are... There should be 3 wins.
Yeah, the next 3 weeks are easy.
Right. It's Panthers, Raiders, Chargers.
Yeah, it's the end of the year that you're like, okay, there might be something there.
Right.
With Pittsburgh and Denver.
They can't really take their foot off the gas fully. They can kind of get to it until they get to the Texans, and then that's kind of like a tune-up game before you have to play the Steelers. Because the Texans, while they're not great as great as they expected to be, they're still a formidable opponent. I mean, sure, you don't have Stephon Diggs anymore, and Nico Collins is still kind of coming back, but the Texans are still a good team.
He'll be back by that time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And like I said, that's kind of a tune-up game for the Chiefs looking to the Steelers the week after that. Mm-hmm. So it's – oh, and that's the Christmas game.
Oh, that's right. Wow. That's right. Yeah.
That's going to be
– okay, good.
That's going to be a great game. That's going to be big.
Hope so. But for me, though, so this is the excitement of this game. It's seeding. It's the potential of seeding.
Right. It's what it means for the future.
It has, for me, the game has lost the luster of, like, all of a sudden, I think, here, this is the Bills' year. Because they beat the Chiefs in the regular season. I think this is the year. Where a few years ago, it was the feeling mainly after 2020. They had lost to them twice that year, once in the regular season and then blown out in the AFC Championship game. Going into 21, when they ultimately do beat them in the regular season, it was that feeling of, you can get them. Where, after 2020, it felt like they were this insurmountable demon that you just could not get past. And at the time, it really was that feeling. You beat them in 21, and then 13 seconds where, I mean, you absolutely can argue, and many, including myself, still do, argue that a bad coaching decision right at the end of the game cost you a win there, so that you would have gone 2-0 in that year. It made it all of a sudden easier to dream that they could beat them. And now they've beaten them regularly in the regular season, including, you know, at home or what have you. Or you've gotten them at home. They no longer seem like this unstoppable force. except you seem to beat them at the wrong time. And that's more my thing is, look, I'm still going to be excited about this win. I'm still going to be happy if they win, and all of a sudden the one seed is a real possibility, especially with all the injuries they picked up. Namely, Amari Cooper, we've seen basically 1.5 games of him healthy, and then now he's picked up a wrist injury. Keon Coleman, also a wrist injury. You know, Matt Milano, we haven't seen at all this year. They've dealt with other injuries, such as Terrell Bernard has missed a couple of games here. Ed Oliver's missed a couple of games. For them to be where they're at is incredibly impressive and indicative of how good this team's coaching is. But it will still be a win where, what, this game will end around 8 o'clock-ish on Sunday. By about 9, I'll be like, okay, but they've got to beat them in the playoffs. They've got to beat them in the likely next matchup. Now, they could miss them entirely in the playoffs. They get knocked out early, or God forbid, the Bills lose early, and there's never that matchup. They haven't met every single year in the playoffs these last few years. They've lost to Cincinnati in the playoffs. So maybe they don't have to play them. But to be fair, for me, it's just this game has not what it was. I know for neutral fans, Josh has brought that up. For neutral fans, it's this feeling of, of course, this is the game of the year. This is the AFC playoffs right here. This is what everyone looks at. I mean, I think there's still some of that residue from the 2020 year where, those are actually the two best teams in the AFC. Cincinnati just happened to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. I think there's still some of that left over. I think even Baltimore, too. Like, for Buffalo does have playoff successes. They lose to Kansas City or Cincinnati, but Allen is a wizard in the playoffs. I mean, they were just showing his numbers just against Kansas City in this game up to that point. He was 10 touchdowns and no picks. Like, he was perfect. Where Baltimore, and mainly Lamar Jackson, has had struggles in the playoffs. Namely against really good teams, namely against Kansas City in last year's AFC Championship game. There is not that same oomph to those games as these two. I would argue Cincinnati and Kansas City hate each other more, but I do think from an NFL fan's perspective, these are the two teams you look at when you think of the AFC power structure.
If you're an NFC fan, right? Like, let's say you're a Lions fan or a 49ers fan, who do you want to win this game?
Buffalo. I want Kansas City gone.
Like this, not a playoff game, this game.
Yeah, I want Buffalo to start getting them for Kansas City to be gone. You want Kansas City to not have the one seed. You want them to have to go through the gauntlet of the NFL playoffs. You want them to have to go on the road. You want them to have to play three straight games. You want them gone. And I think that's because it's no disrespect to Buffalo. I think it is a certain point already now with Kansas City of, I would argue, most NFL fans don't want to play them. They want to move on from them. San Francisco, I think especially. San Francisco has lost twice in the Super Bowl to them. I think they more than anyone want them gone. And then for Detroit, you maybe could argue you could take on Buffalo or Kansas City again. I think there is somewhat of a feeling you could take them on just because they aren't necessarily a great team this year. They're not. They keep winning. They're not a great team this year. I'd argue for the Bills the same thing, though. I'd argue for both of them. I mean, back to Joe and Jeremy's conversation from this morning, I'd argue it's for both of them that neither of them are actually as good as their record indicates. Buffalo's had a number of slow starts to the point where it is being a weekly question to McDermott, in which McDermott then also goes, the slow start's got to stop. And then for the Chiefs, Mahomes, has he finally passed touchdowns to interceptions? I mean, maybe. And even then, I mean, they're not healthy. Their defense is getting it done, but it's a lot of one-score games. It's a lot of like, oh my God, how did that happen? Look at the blocked field goal from this weekend. Just is it's sort of an explanation for it.
12 touchdowns, 9 interceptions.
Okay, so he has passed it. But even then, that's still a really poor year from him. They're not getting anything out of Xavier Worthy, I mean, at all. Outside of week one where he had 2 touchdowns, he's been almost a non-factor every single week. He does have, of course, the long touchdown against the Chargers, but he's been effectively a non-factor.
If Keon Coleman was playing this week, I'd be much more excited just because of the fact that you get to see the two of them go head-to-head.
Yeah, in terms I can argue of, that, yeah.
That was the whole conversation for the last 3 months of the offseason, right? Basically from the draft, actually. So, like, the whole offseason was just, how could you do this? What are you doing? Yep. And we knew that we would have been able to see it eventually, but then it gets here and then it's, they're both hurt. Well, Keon's hurt and out. Worthy might.
I didn't see any like injury. I know a lot of people said like after the deep ball that was missed, he was injured. I didn't see anything.
I'm not sure. I know that in the last game he was, not banged up, but like they were monitoring him essentially. So that's something that people have said is like, something to watch for this week. But I mean, I'm assuming he's going to be playing.
I assume he's going to be playing.
Which you're still going to see, oh, well, like, this is what the Bills could have had, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Which, still, seeing what him and Keon Coleman have both done this year, I would still probably take Keon Coleman.
Well, yeah, because for me, everything I thought about Worthy has somewhat come true, at least early.
The size and things like that.
And then, honestly, a lot of it is just the way they're trying to use him. It's a lot of – Mahomes has to hit 10-90 balls. I mean, he's throwing it 65 yards down the field, and he's got to put it on a dime. That's difficult for any great quarterback. Or it's difficult for any quarterback, including great quarterbacks. That's their biggest issue. They don't really know how to use him outside of the fact that he's fast.
I saw a tweet this morning, and it's from @PolishThunder87 on Twitter. Great, great
beautiful
handle, by
beautiful.
The way. Is Xavier Worthy just Rashid Shaheed? I think...
Yeah, you could argue that.
You could argue that, but it's probably, with both of them, too small of a sample size. Because, I mean, Shaheed has just kind of burst onto the scene, and Worthy is a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long Shaheed's been in the league. I don't know.
Not long.
I think it's been like, what, 2 years, maybe three years? But it's an interesting conversation because Shaheed, when he did burst onto the scene, he had speed. He was getting separation because of the speed. And he was just, every once in a while, you'd see a bomb aired out to him. And it was a 90-10 ball, like you mm-hmm. were just bringing up. And that's kind of what we've seen Worthy do so far. But it's too early to tell, I think, for Worthy of what he actually is. And with a guy like Shaheed, I mean, he's just kind of stuck in a bad offense.
You're right, though. I think it's we're not at a – well, Shaheed's also hurt. He's out for the year with the Saints.
Right, right. But I just meant before that.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, before that, he was kind of their whole offense, and then he gets hurt and they crumble.
They fell away.
Yeah.
But with Worthy, yeah, I think it's a fair argument that it's too early right now to totally like put a nail in the coffin for his career. Obviously, we're, what, 11 games in for him? We still got some time. Same with Keon Coleman. I think it's too early to have a victory lap with him either. I mean, he's still not an incredible separator by any means. Drop issues have also kind of been a thing for him this year. So, yeah, I think it's still early for both. But if we're just going who's happiest right now, it's absolutely Buffalo with Keon. Absolutely. Where the Chiefs are probably sitting there going, you know, how are we not getting anything out of Worthy? We have no healthy wide receivers. We lost Hollywood Brown. We lost Rashee Rice. And
they did add DeAndre Hopkins.
They added Hopkins, but even before that, you weren't getting anything out of Worthy. That was the frustrating part.
Right. But adding Hopkins did definitely supplement their offense.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's
been a nice addition for them, absolutely.
Right. But that's not sustainable, obviously. That's just like an in-season rental type of guy. Mm-hmm. Whereas you were hoping that your young, fast, rookie wide receiver was going to be doing maybe not exactly what DeAndre Hopkins does, but...
I think there was hope that he was going to be like another version of Tyreek Hill for that.
Right. But Tyreek Hill, I mean, they're similar players, but they're also very different.
I think they're similar players how they play. Only in their fast. I think that's where they're similar, is their fast. Worthy came into this year 20 pounds lighter than Hill in his rookie year. They are not the same player. That's what makes Hill so dangerous. He is bigger than you would think, and then he's that fast. Worthy is just fast, and he looks like a guy that is only fast. He looks like John Ross. He's much smaller than you would like any sort of number one wide receiver to be.
What's funny is Worthy is an inch taller than Tyreek Hill.
Oh, yeah.
That's so...
Hill is short and stocky.
Mm-hmm.
And then is just a flamethrower.
Well, and also, too, you got to think, when he first came into the league... He really wasn't doing all that much in his first season.
More of a special teams guy and stuff like that.
His sophomore and, I guess if you want to call it junior seasons, he got over 1,000 yards both times. But that's also kind of when Patrick Mahomes is on the rise and there's all that going on. But looking at what Tyreek Hill went through his first year, I think is how we could look at Xavier Worthy in terms of adjusting to the NFL game with your size. And that's something that Worthy, I think, is still going through. So... Honestly, I think you're going to have to wait 2 or 3 years to really see what Xavier Worthy can be if he can make that adjustment like Tyreek Hill did.
It's just frustrating if you are the Chiefs because where Hill was, what, a fifth, sixth round pick, Worthy's a first round pick, and you're sort of hoping not hoping, you kind of even needed him to hit the ground running. We'll see where this goes. I'm excited for that matchup for the Bills, though. I know there's been a lot of talk on the safeties. I think the safeties have been, for the most part, fine this year. Not great, but we're used to great safety play, and I think that's going to be a big difference now. But I'm excited to see how they handle him because he has had opportunities to be open. Mahomes has just missed those throws. 803-0550 is the number to call. We'll get to your tweets as well when we come back. But really, the question of the day is, has this regular season matchup with the Chiefs lost its luster for you? Or is it still that game of the year contender? We'll also get a look at the Sabres. They lost yesterday in not heartbreaking fashion, but definitely frustrating fashion, 7-5 to Montreal. We'll get a look in with them as Paul Hamilton will join the show at 11 o'clock. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
We're going to take it one week at a time here. We'll see how this week goes. And, you know, really where we're at is, you know, it's been a while since he's played football here, and he's done a phenomenal job along with our trainers of getting back to now where he can get back out there. And really just take it one day and one week at a time. And those guys are going to reassess towards the end of the week and see where he's at and then what the next week may hold for him.
Here's Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking about Matt Milano. The Bills have opened up his 21-day practice window. We'll get more on that when Sal Capaccio joins the show tomorrow. Very excited for that. I have positive feelings, that he could play in the San Francisco game with the Bills playing Kansas City this week. We already know he's out for this game. Bye week next week. I have a good feeling about San Francisco, but we'll see where Sal sits on that again when he joins the show tomorrow. Let's get connected to our fan zone, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Kind of the question of the day, has the Bills-Chiefs regular season matchup lost its luster, or is it still the game of the year contender for you? I know for me personally, and me and Josh were just talking about that in the last segment, it sort of has. It's becoming this, you're just waiting to get this game over with to meet them in the playoffs, and that's what it's become. It's you're waiting for the Bills even to just beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. Pepe kind of says the same thing, a little bit though different. It's still important in regards of seeding. However, I don't think I feel any different when it comes to a possible game in the playoffs, no matter if they win big or lose big in that regular season game. Yep, I don't, and that's a big thing too. Even if they lose this weekend, it won't move me nearly as much as maybe some other losses would. Not even saying like the Baltimore loss. I think a lot of us took away maybe way too many takeaways from that game or what have you. Or a really crappy loss, Jacksonville, the Urban Meyer year, where you're just kind of left jaw on the floor going, what just happened? With this Chiefs game, it'll be like, okay, you know, pick yourself up, get healthy, we'll meet them again in the playoffs. There won't be this definitive feeling of, yeah, they can't get past them. At least for me, there won't be this definitive feeling of they can't get past them. Likewise, if they win, it won't be they've got them. I've moved past that feeling because they've done it before. They've beaten them before. And ultimately, they've missed in the biggest moments, whether it be 13 seconds last year. The Bass miss didn't really play into it all that much. They had to do a lot to get back in that game. It's much more like the Diggs drop and what have you that ultimately kind of sealed it for me. HC tweets in, it is entertaining, but it is just another game. The only one that matters is in the playoffs. Win or lose in the regular season, use as a learning tool for how to play better in the playoffs. Nothing but a Super Bowl matters. And I think that is somewhat of the curse of being a good team who has not gotten over the hump. I'm feeling it this way too this year. They're 8-2. It's their best start since what, like the 90s?
And 93.
Yet, 93. And yet I'm sitting here going, Yeah, but. And I didn't do that for a lot of like their first years. You know, 2020, just every win was just euphoric. And it was a drug that I just couldn't get off of. And a lot of that was just because you lived through the drought for so long. This is the first time I'm seeing a team that, like, by week 4 or 5, I just expected them to win. And that was a foreign feeling to me. Now it's not. Now even them playing, you know, their C game against Indianapolis, it wasn't surprising when they won. I didn't have this jubilation when they won. It was like, oh, all right, good. On to the next. You know, it's like the West Wing. Miss Lanningham, what's next? That's what it is for me now. It's maybe not healthy because I know Bulldogs talked about this a lot too, mainly with the Sabres, but the Bills have been dragged into that as well over these last few years of you want to enjoy the regular seasons. You don't want to all of a sudden look back and go, oh man, I didn't really sit and enjoy it. I was constantly looking forward to the playoffs. I personally haven't been able to do that though. I have now become when's January? When's February? I'll enjoy the first few weeks when the season gets started, but then like every injury also mounts up of just don't be season ending. Don't be an injury that is going to change the dynamic of how the playoffs are going to go. Matt Milano, for me, the best news was not that he was going to just play it all this year. It was more like a, hey, he'll be ready before the playoffs start so that he's ready to go by the playoffs, all things go well. Same with the Keon Coleman or Amari Cooper injury. You know, a few years ago, I'd have been freaking out that just they couldn't play in a game or two in a row. Now I'm sitting there going, no, no, get them healthy. Get them healthy, and then we'll worry about everything afterwards. This team can win without them. It may not look pretty. It may look awful. But, yeah, we'll figure that out when we get there. Joshua has a little bit different take. Nope, I just want to crush the Chiefs and take away their perfect season. I think that's fair. I think that is definitely fair. I want to be a pain in the you-know-what to them anytime I can be. I think that's a very fair feeling, especially with the perfect season. I will tell you, though, it's a lot like the 2020 Steelers, and I am now comfortably comparing the Chiefs to that team. I do think the Steelers are on a different level, though, of bad when they were undefeated. The Chiefs are not there. But for me, that was frustrating when Washington had beaten the Steelers just before the Bills had played them. And it was like, I wanted to be the team that took that away from them. I wanted to be the team. The Bills ultimately still beat them, and it was sort of like a definitive, all right, yeah, this team is not as good as we all maybe thought. But I wanted to be the team that would ultimately do that. Johnny tweets in, I care more about being healthy for the postseason. It's kind of where I'm at a little bit too than winning this game. We need to beat them when it counts most. And so, yeah, I know the Amari Cooper thing has kind of gotten weird too, and McDermott hasn't really helped by not necessarily away a ton of details, but seemingly every time he talks about Amari Cooper, it is a little weird. And, you know, the pain tolerance thing, you never know. He's in a cast, so I feel like it's a little bit more than pain tolerance. Like, he's not catching footballs. I feel like it's more than just pain tolerance. But, yeah, for me, I've seen what this offense can look like now when all those guys are healthy. So, for me, it's just get those guys healthy. And that includes now Kincaid on that list. And included Shakir a number of weeks ago of, I just want to get to a point they're healthy moving forward so that in the playoffs, because that's been a big thing, a massive thing for the Bills the last few years is the playoff injuries or the injuries they've just accumulated over the year, whether it be Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard are both out against the Chiefs, whether it be all the way back in 2020 where Cole Beasley's basically playing on a broken leg and Stephon Diggs, I think, also had to have surgery later that offseason as well for an injury he had obtained. It's just they've dealt with so many injuries for so many playoff runs, they just run out of guys. Now, last year, coaching decision, I know me and Sneaky Joe agree on this as well, I would have much rather had Dorian Williams play than A.J. Klein at linebacker. I also, though, can kind of get to this point, I don't know how much it would have mattered at the time. Dorian, I think, was great, is a great athlete, but I don't think he was going to be able to truly stop Kelce or stop what the Chiefs were able to do. But we'll see. We will see now this year, I think, in terms of what they're going to be able to do. They don't have Matt Milano. Again, Terrell Bernard's healthy. They're getting healthier at some key positions. They're not at others. And that's, yeah, for me, it's I guess maybe also tough to get up for this game too, is just knowing you're wounded. Where in years past, you maybe haven't been in the regular season, you have been, though, in the playoffs. And for me, that is maybe the biggest thing. And it's also why I do look, though, at the one seed. And that's the one thing that really is getting me up for this game is the battle for the one seed. Because if you get that, the idea that of having a bye week, another week where these guys can just rest, you know, recover, what have you, or another week where they maybe weren't going to be able to play in the wild card game, but they can in this game, or there's no opportunity for them to get hurt in the wild card game. Terrell Bernard last year, you know, there's no opportunity for that. Instead, it's just, you know, it's a, I don't know how they necessarily practiced that week, but I'd assume a nice week of practice into the divisional round. That's where I'm at with them. But I totally agree, though, on Joshua's point. I can totally understand it. Just wanting to crush them and take away that perfect season. But as Josh pointed out in the first segment too, looking at their schedule, especially the way they're playing, Pittsburgh and then at Denver might open up room for that perfect season to get kiboshed later, but it would be nice for that to be on the Bills' resume. Let's go to the phones here. We've got Kathy on the line. Kathy, how are we doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing very well.
So I don't think the Chiefs have the same urgency this year because, I mean, we already have the East, that's for sure. Getting the one seed is a pretty big reach, so it really doesn't matter hugely if we win. But and I don't think the Chiefs are as good as they've been in the past years. But what I really want is I just want to pummel them. I just want to kick the snot out of them. You know, like kind of like the first Miami game where it's just one touchdown after the other. And I just think that would feel so good.
Kathy, I think you're on something there with that, too, and thanks for the call. That might be also another win that would maybe move me to just, like, have just the you-know-what grin on my face for a few hours is you just embarrass them. That Mahomes throws, like, three picks. You return one for a touchdown. They can't stop the run game or you know, big plays are happening, and you're just like, yeah. Like, this one's going to sting for them for a while. It's something, I mean, I've still got the game from last year on the TV. I just really enjoyed, like, how mad they were last year. That barely cared about us winning outside of like, ooh, the playoff hopes are still alive, but like there were still 7-6 at the time. The biggest thing for me was, man, look how upset Mahomes is. He's so angry. He's so upset. I enjoyed that. Andy Reid, the same thing. And kind of watching him step in it a little bit, that was fun. And that could be something too of like just a win here. Maybe not necessarily anything like that, but a win where ultimately they're just not competitive. That all of a sudden, all of these one-score games and these dashes and of you know, stealing victory from the jaws of defeat, what have you, it finally comes back to roost for them, and they just get blown out. That I would enjoy. But I'll tell you, I still get back to probably that same feeling of, but they've got to beat them in the playoffs because they're going to the playoffs. They're undefeated up to this point. It would take a historic collapse in which the likes we've basically never seen for that to happen. And Kathy, you brought up a good point too, and maybe this is actually playing into my feelings as well, is just how uncompetitive the NFC or the AFC East is. I think that might be something too of just there's not even a division battle that I'm watching where it's like, no, you need to beat the Chiefs just to stay alive, to keep pace with a Jets or a Miami. Like last year, that played into it. Yeah, I think the thing I most enjoyed was afterwards and how upset the Chiefs were. But again, like I said, them being 7-6 and still alive in the playoffs, that was huge. That was massive. And then you start to see the fall of the Dolphins. But maybe that is playing into it, of just the AFC East is just a non-factor. At least this year. I will tell you, I am watching the Patriots with growing interest every single week, mainly just through the play of Drake May. He scares me. I think a lot of us who listened to me during the draft know how I felt about Drake May and how I felt about the Patriots getting him. I was not thrilled about that by any means because I do like him as a prospect a lot. But they're a few years away. It's not going to be, you know, next year or even this year. It's not going to be the two final regular season games. And maybe it is playing into it where now it really has just become looking towards January. I know you're going to be one of the top four seeds. Which one are you going to be? I know we're going to get another AFC East title. Now I just want to know who we're hosting for round one for the wild card, if not the division. I don't think it's totally out of reach, though, Kathy. I think if you beat Kansas City here and looking at the late schedule for them, for the Chiefs, I mean, they maybe could pick up another loss or two where all of a sudden now that tiebreaker plays into it. Likely that happens? No, probably not. But I think it's still a possibility. Bo tweets in, will and should be a good game. I just want to see Buffalo beat them in the playoffs. I've seen Buffalo beat them in the regular season. Short, sweet, and to the point. I think it's right. At least for me, I think it's right. It's where I'm at. I've seen them do this. I've seen them win in Arrowhead. I've seen them blow them out in Arrowhead. The rain delay game from a few years ago. I've seen them just blow them out. Look like definitively the better team. But every year in the playoffs, I mean, you know, Kelsey, maybe it's the perfect example there. Kelsey all year just looks like a shell of himself. Doesn't look good at all. And then the playoffs happen and he pops off. And you just have to watch and go, great, of course it's against us. Of course it's right now. Where the rest of the year, he couldn't do anything. And then all of a sudden, he's back to his old self. He's sort of getting there this year too. Where, you know, to start the year, there was this feeling, maybe he's sort of falling off. Here we go. You know, this is father time getting him. He's sort of picked it up again this year. Just want to get his game logs for this year to kind of go through that. But because they've been dealing with a lot of injuries, these last three games, 12 targets, 10 catches, 90 yards for a touchdown against Vegas. 16 targets, 14 catches, 100 yards against Tampa. And then 12 targets, 8 catches, 64 yards, and a touchdown on Sunday against Denver. He's also had some other games in there against the Chargers, 9 targets, 7 catches, 89 yards. New Orleans, 10 targets, 9 catches, 70 yards. I mean, he's somewhat back, and it's frustrating. Yeah, I mean, you know, glass half full kind of guy, you could probably sit there and go, well, you know, maybe not. Maybe he's, you know, using up everything now because they need him, and then come the playoffs, you know, the wear and tear drags him down. But you look last year in the playoffs too. And even the three games leading up to it, he was inactive week 17 in their win against the Chargers. But those three games leading up to it, 7 targets, 5 catches, 28 yards, 7 targets, 5 catches, 44 yards, 4 targets, 3 catches, 16 yards. And then game against Miami, 10 targets, 7 catches, 71 yards. Against the Bills, 6 targets, 5 catches, 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. Baltimore, he's perfection, 11 for 11, 116 and a touchdown. And then in the Super Bowl, 10 targets, 9 for 93. It was just like, oh, come on. Like another thing that just happens and you're like, great, great. But maybe they're having to use him too much here because they're not getting anything out of Worthy. Rashee Rice is obviously out for the season. Hollywood Brown may miss the entire season. But that's another thing I've been thinking about for the playoffs is they're going to get Hollywood Brown and Isaiah Pacheco back here relatively soon. Hollywood Brown, they're hoping for the playoffs. We'll see if that even happens. And then Pacheco, I think within the next 2 or 3 weeks, they'll end up having him back. But there's a lot to this game that I think is only really playing out in the future over the next few weeks. You know, if the Bills lose this week, it's a foregone conclusion. The Chiefs will get the one seed. The Bills, though, will likely have one of the other four seeds. And how the AFC North is going and the AFC South in general, likely the two, even with losses to Houston and Baltimore. And I will still argue till I'm blue in the face, I want another shot at either of those teams. Both teams healthy, I want another shot. Because I think the Bills have found their passing attack. They just are getting hurt just as they found it. And then with Houston, I just don't think that team's good at all. The Bills had no wide receivers. Allen goes 9 for 30, and it took a late-game decision for Houston to get that win. I think if the Bills have Cooper, even just Cooper and Shakir, I think that they win that game pretty handedly. 803-0550 is the number to call. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Paul Hamilton, though, we'll join the show as the Sabres lost yesterday to Montreal 7-5, ending a 3-game win streak. But perhaps maybe the biggest news, something we won't really get until later this afternoon either, the health of Tage Thompson and Matias Samuelsson. We'll get his thoughts on yesterday's game and also the previous few games as well. It's been a little bit since we've talked with Paul. We'll do that at 11 o'clock. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Gonna get a little hockey in here in the next few minutes as Paul Hamilton will join the show. The Sabres lost yesterday 7-5 to Montreal. Goaltending very much optional in that game for both teams. Both teams ultimately benched their starters as well, and the goals still kept coming. Sabres, though, won't be in action again until Thursday. That's going to be a radio-only game, though, right here in WGR. You'll only be able to watch it on TV with ESPN+. They'll be hosting the 7-8 St. Louis Blues. Real quick, though, some college basketball I want to get into. We've got some fun matchups tonight coming up as well in the top 25. Kansas and Michigan State coming up at 6:30. And then I believe at 9:30 is going to be Kentucky and Duke. Duke with Cooper Flagg, kind of the Duke villain, and he's going to fill out that role, I think, very nicely. They should be a very, very good team. And then Duke post John Calipari, or Kentucky post John Calipari, always going to be interesting to watch. But last night, I was catching a little bit of UB versus Notre Dame. UB winning as, I think, a 23.5-point underdog. And the only reason I do want to give them their flowers, and mainly their head coach, George Halkovich. I was talking a little bit with some fans yesterday and some reporters for UB. Look, it's early. And they also did lose to Damon in a preseason, you know, game.
And almost to Fredonia.
And almost
Let's go.
Lost to Fredonia. But up to this point, watching their young players develop, and the fact that this team did win 4 games. I'm not saying this team is all of a sudden going to win 25 games and go on this little run and be exciting, and we're back to what we were in right before 2020, like, you know, the Nate Oates era. But really what they needed to show this year was any sort of improvement. And to watch some of these young players, They didn't just recruit like a bunch of seniors who are now going to be like okay in MAC basketball. I think they've recruited really, really nice freshmen.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And sophomores who are coming in and playing really, really well. Ben Michaels, I think out of Canada, was somebody I've been really impressed by. He's looked very, very good. Ryan Sabol, I believe I'm saying his name correctly. He's a sophomore. Up to this point through three games, he's averaging 19 points per game and shooting 43% from three, and he's a sophomore. I mean, those could be key additions for them. The women's team is much more ahead of them where they're at. They are going to be competitive in the MAC this year. But for UB to play close with Notre Dame, 86-77, and it was a much closer game. That's the ending of close college basketball games where a team just gets to make free throws. They were up at half and gave them all they could. I didn't get to watch a lot of the game. I saw some fans upset with the officials. I know, surprise, surprise. But as a college basketball junkie, I'd love for the local teams to be good. I know there's an NIL deal that Adrian Wojnarowski just announced for St. Bonaventure as well, which should be good for them. And they've looked really good up to this point. Very, very exciting times, hopefully, in local college basketball. Going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, Paul Hamilton joins the show to give us more on the Sabres. We hope to have more of an update on Tage Thompson and Matias Samuelson later this afternoon. But we'll get more on the last few games for the Sabres and moving forward as Paul will join the show next. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Sabres now with a chance here to start something again. Paterka to the net! Scores! J.J. Paterka with a beauty! And it's 5-4 Buffalo!
Dan Dunleavy on the call there. 5-4 Buffalo. Don't worry, they would lose the lead again in that game. Ultimately, eventually lose 7-5 to Montreal. Goaltending very much optional yesterday, but perhaps the biggest storyline of that game, the health of Tage Thompson and Matias Samuelson. I don't really know if anyone actually even saw Tage Thompson get hurt or what happened. Just seemed to notice that he was not on the bench or wasn't playing much in the second period. And for more on yesterday's game, and really the last few for the Sabres, we go to the Western Hotline as Paul Hamilton joins the show. Paul, good morning. How are we doing today?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yesterday's game, Paul, as like a neutral fan, I would have loved it. As a Sabres fan, I was white-knuckling my steering wheel driving in yesterday.
Yeah, it just... so many chances to win. I mean, they kept coming back, and almost immediately they would come back. And then they gave up two bad goals in the last minute. Lots of mistakes were had there. I'm sure some pucks maybe Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen thought maybe he could have had two. And so now you're down again. But it took, what, 3.5 minutes to get back up again? They tied the game and took the lead rather quickly. And then it's just they revert back to, it seems like they revert back to what they know. No matter how well they're playing, no matter what year it is, no matter who the players are, it's, yeah, we can play well for three games or five games when you're, or six games rather, when you went 4-1-1, but you can't sustain it. And you can beat the Dallas Stars, and you can beat the Florida Panthers, and you can beat the New York Rangers, but you can't beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, or the Columbus Blue Jackets, or the New York Islanders, or the Montreal Canadiens. It's goofy. And all right, so here you are. You were the second worst team a week ago in the league. You win three in a row, so up the standings you go. And you're about in the middle now. Then you lose to the worst team in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Who has the worst goals against in the league, who had lost six in a row, although they had won five, now they've won five in a row in Buffalo. But
thanks for that.
Yeah. But it just, the pattern never changes. And that's the problem. And they make goofy mistakes. The mistakes were plentiful yesterday. They're turning the puck over. They're not killing plays the way they are. Yeah, they scored 5 goals, but they only had 18 shots. A lot of goals came, you know, on the rush. And you gave your power, your penalty killing had been much better recently when you win 3 in a row. You give up 2 power play goals. After you take the lead in the third period, you allow them to tie the game. Okay, you've allowed them to tie the game, but you're okay. You're not behind. So if you have to, get it to overtime. Whatever. But no, your captain decides to take a stupid elbowing penalty. He just loses his focus. He lets anger get the best of him, and it makes him to make bad decisions on the ice. It's been happening all year. He wants to win so badly that when it doesn't go right, he gets so angry and so upset, it takes away from his game, and he does things like that. That's not the first dumb penalty he's had to stand there after the game and say, I take responsibility for that. And I admire him for taking responsibility for that. But you got to stop doing it. You know, you just gave him a goal to make it 5-5, and within 20 seconds you take that penalty while they've got the momentum of just tying the game. So what did you think might happen? They might score a power play goal. Guess what? The leading goal scorer in the National Hockey League scored a power play goal. I mean, they just can't build on their success long term. It's a short term thing, and then they revert back to what they do, and then we'll see it again. We'll see them play good hockey again. There's no question in my mind. And quite honestly, I do think they're a better team than they were last year. But they do the same types of things. The MO is still the same. And until I see something different, I have no reason to believe that MO is going to change.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's my biggest thing, too, is just, like, as a fan, it's very frustrating. I've gotten to a point, too, wanting to, like, almost check in on these games, like, in clusters. I'm trying desperately, failing at times, but trying desperately to not look at one game and create a bunch of narratives about it. It's like, no, let's look at the week as a picture. But the Sabres do make it difficult because, Paul, as you pointed out, like, this is their MO. They'll win 3 in a row, and then they will play abysmally against one of the worst teams in hockey. Montreal wasn't even scoring all that much going into Buffalo. They put up 7. And they didn't even have a ton of shots either. It was all of a sudden became bad goaltending, terrible defensive structure. And now, you know, you're right. They're going to play good hockey again. They may even on Thursday against St. Louis, who's also, you know, kind of around them in terms of not necessarily the standings, but in terms of their record. But the penalties too, Paul. This team and taking penalties, they took 6 yesterday. I mean, Dahlin takes the bad one, sure, but it's like you keep giving teams chances on these power plays. It's absurd at times.
And that had improved
until
yesterday, mm-hmm. And now they're back to it. You know, and you know, defending had improved until yesterday when they're turning the puck over. And the first goal by Montreal, do you realize neither defenseman was back?
Mm-hmm.
Those were two forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Both defensemen had gone up into the zone. Meaning two forwards were back, and Anderson got behind him. Whoa, what are you guys doing there? I know you want to help in the offensive zone, but both defensemen? And then you leave two forwards back there? But, all right, you did that, but look at what Tage Thompson does just a few seconds later. Comes barreling up the ice, realizes that Montreal did the same thing. Caulfield was back, blew around him, scored the goal. Okay, you're fine. It's 1-1. You can forget about that. You made a mistake, but Tage Thompson had you. He had your back. So now it's 1-1. Now let's go. Let's start playing the way you're capable of playing. Because you're not going to be perfect in the game. I mean, you're going to make some mistakes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You just have to minimize them and not make the mistakes that Lindy Ruff was talking about where, you know, you were in good shape and all of a sudden you did this. Why? Why did you complicate the play when you were in good shape? Type of a thing. And, that's what, you know, we saw in that game. And it just is mind-boggling that because you would think, as I said, they are better. When they play the way Lindy Ruff is asking them to play, they're a darn good hockey team. For those 3 games, especially 2 plus 2 periods, they were a good team. You know, that in New York against the Rangers, that was a good hockey team. You know, so they're capable of it. That's the and I think, you know, you talk about fans. The fans that talk to me, I think that's where their frustration lies because they see the capability. They see that it's there, the players are there, that they're very capable of being a good team. And they show it to us many times. But then this creeps in for maybe three games, maybe one game. I don't know how many games. Last time it was three games. After you win three, you lose three. You know,
and yeah, I think that's the fear too. Is like you lose to Montreal, but then you're looking at the schedule and in a run here of teams that quote unquote the team that beat the Rangers and blew out Ottawa should beat, and you look and go, are we really just going to kind of just stick around 500, lose three here, get none of them to overtime, so that we get no points for like a week? It's that's my thing, and where it's the constant frustrations we've talked about it a lot. That's probably a big reason why this drought hasn't already ended is this team's inability to drag games to overtime to really let them slip late. Yesterday being a magnifying glass on it. It's brutal at times.
And that's what I liked of the Calgary game, because they found a way to win the hockey game. They played a good 40 minutes. They didn't play good third period, and they allowed Calgary to tie the game because of it. Okay. First of all, you're playing a Western Conference team, so if you get this to overtime and Calgary gets a point, who cares? It's not like you gave somebody around you in the standings a point. So fine, get it to overtime and now work to get your point. They did it. And that's what I liked about that game is, all right, maybe you didn't have the game you had against the Rangers, but you found a way to win the hockey game. And that's all that matters, is you got your 2 points. And that's what you're talking about, that there's not enough of those that you get to overtime and find a way to win a hockey game. That's one of the reasons probably why they didn't make the playoffs last year, because they were one of the worst in the league at getting games to overtime and getting the loser points. So, you know, that's exactly what they need. This game... All right, Montreal made it 5-5. You haven't played well. Don't take the penalty and get it to overtime, you know, and go get your try for your second point there. They pulled the goalie. Do you know that goaltender came in, made 4 saves, and got the win?
Oh.
He got the win, and Levi got the loss. And Levi let in 2 goals on 2 shots, but do you blame him on either one? He was totally screened on the first one. Mm-hmm. There were people all over. He never even saw it coming. And the second one is a cross-ice pass for a tap-in because nobody's got the guy off the post on the power play. I don't blame him for either goal, but he didn't make a save till 15 minutes into the third period.
Yeah.
Those were the only 2 shots Montreal had.
And that's the worst part, too. Let's not act like Montreal, you know, quote-unquote, like earned those 7 goals. It was a lot of, like, for both teams, too, not really getting good shots, not hitting the net, anything like that. It was just, when you did, it was, what, like a 50-50 shot they were going to go in?
I like to say 6 goals, the empty netter. I ignore the empty netter. So, really, they had 6 goals against goaltending. And, you know, when the play was actually going on, Buffalo actually almost prevented the empty netter. I wish I remembered. I think it was Cousins who got back and actually spoiled the first chance the guys got. But he had to get off his skates and dive to make that play. And I did like the hustle there to get back. If it wasn't Cousins, I apologize. It was somebody else. But whoever it was got back there and you know, at least showed that, hey, I'm not going to let them just dump the puck into the empty net. Unfortunately, you know, that by that time, the guy who shot the puck went down. He went down. Everybody went by the net. And there was another guy there who put it in. But still, it's just it's mind-boggling what and I think what's more mind-boggling to me is that this group does it that way that we've described, but so did the group before them. And you know, when you look at this overall picture, they've changed GMs how many times, they've changed coaches how many times, they've redone the team by my count 3 times, and nothing's worked. So now what?
Time is a flat circle, Paul. Never forget.
You've done every option you've done multiple times, and you still haven't made the playoffs in 13 years. So now what?
And that's been my big thing too. Is like you need to win with this group. I mean, you're not going to get high end trade pieces because they're not going to want to come play for you. You look like a toxic sludge of an organization. Free agents, same thing. I like this young core they have. And, Paul, you brought that up too, and it was Cousins as well, so I do want to go to him as well. I mean, is he sort of picking up his game as well? Jack Quinn, less so. But Cousins, it does feel like we're starting to get a little bit of something from him.
Now, Quinn has two. If you watch Quinn on the wall in battles, I think you see an improvement there. That line is in on the forecheck and getting in on the forecheck for the last, I think the Ranger game might have been the first game. They did it against Calgary. So that's where I've seen the improvement in Quinn. And Cousins, you're right, I think has also improved his game, got a nice tip-in goal. You know, going to the net, gets the tip in goal to score. So, it's just your original point. You are very right in what you say about they're kind of stuck. It has to be this group. You forgot one, the biggest point of all, the contracts. Mm-hmm. These are untradeable contracts right now. You have committed to your core. If, and I will say if, this core is not right, because I won't say definitely it's not right. It hasn't looked right yet, but there are also a lot of young players there. So I'm not gonna sit there and say the mistakes have been made. It's possible the mistakes have been made. And if they have been made, you are stuck, because the contracts that you have signed these guys to are untradeable if these players don't get better. And I will say this, the Buffalo Sabres are not the only team in the National Hockey League has done this. This is the way business is done in the NHL. The bridge contracts are very, very minimal now. You hardly ever see them unless it's a guy who you don't think is going to be part of your core. The way I look at Henry Okiharju, they signed him to a one-year contract. That tells me he has not been identified as one of their core players. It's like, well, let's bring him back for one more year and see what happens type of a thing. So that's the problem. But it's not only the Buffalo Sabres doing business this way. Most teams are doing business this way, locking up young players on potential. And I know many are giving up on Samuelson. I don't know why. He's not that old. If he can start playing like he did when he got that contract, he will be a steal, an absolute steal. He is capable of being a very good defenseman. Have injuries taken their toll? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But, you know, the play has gone down. Is it just a lack of confidence? Have injuries taken their toll? Can he get back to where he was when he, in my mind, was fine playing with Dahlin on the number one pair and did a great job? That's why he got the contract. And 3-5 million dollars, whatever it is. I can look it up while we're talking. That's not a lot of money if he's playing the way he did when he started off with. It's 4.286 million that he gets. So that contract will look awfully good if he gets over the injuries, and he's got another one now. We don't know how serious. And that's the other thing. If Tage Thompson is out for any length of time, that's it. This isn't happening. I'm telling you right now. There are some players you cannot afford to lose, and he absolutely is a player. I mean, when he scored that goal, he was the leading goal scorer in the National Hockey League. Yeah. Now, later on in the game, Caulfield caught him and went by him with 12. But he's got 11. He's second in the NHL in goal scoring. They cannot afford to lose him for long term. If that happens, then sorry, folks. It's not going to happen this year.
Sadly, that was going to kind of be my next point, too. I mean, both Samuelson and Thompson leave. They both play under 7 minutes yesterday. Or 7 minutes of total ice time. But it's just the goal, I think, yesterday too, Paul, like just from Thompson, just showed, I mean, just how good he can be. It's effectively a solo effort. Just it drags his defense in with him. He's bigger than him and just goes right to the net. He's an unbelievable player. You've seen how good he is. I've joked now that he has two healthy wrists because that was obviously an issue last year. I mean, he's back to being superstar Thompson. But yeah, it seems like we're in like this kind of, you know, wait and hold period with the Sabres because I fully agree with you. If he's out for, I'd even say if it's just it's a week to week, we're going to, you know, or, you know, we think he can be back in 5-6 games. I know that's not how they necessarily say it, but, you know, if he can be back in 5-6 games, you feel good. It's like, not really, actually, no. He has been a force for the Sabres this year. Like you said, he's second in goal scoring this year. He's on a four-game goal streak now. I mean, he has been an unbelievable player. He's back to kind of what he was 2 years ago, or I think he'd even be on that pace now. And it's just, yeah, I mean, I love what J.J. Paterka looks like. I think he is a wonderful player that is growing to be one of the better forwards on the Sabres. I think Tuck's had a good year. You're getting something out of Cousins as well. But he is a different player from, it seems, the rest of the Sabres, at least at the forward position.
No, he is. And a couple of weeks, maybe they can get away with that. But not much longer than that. You know, if it's a month, 2 months, no. It's, yeah. You know, some other guys, you hate to lose them in some cases, but you could get away with it. With him, the way he's playing, I mean, he's a big part of them playing well. That line forechecks hard. And when they're going, and they're going most of the time, they're in the offensive zone for a lot of the game. And, you know, they've been a force. You know, just look at Paterka, the goal he scored to give them the lead in the third period. He came flying off the bench, got the puck, backed the defenseman into the goaltender, and then, you know, put a backhand in the net. But it was his speed that backed the defenseman off. They see him coming with that speed, they're backing off. They're not going to stand up at the blue line on that. Or he'll make him look silly. Made him look silly anyway. But, you know, just look at that goal that he scored. I mean, that line is a very important piece to this puzzle if they're going to, start turning this into something big.
And, Paul, last thing on that, too. Are we expecting – I know Lindy Ruff met with Jeremy and Joe this morning. Is he expected to speak now later with the media as well?
No, they're off today.
Okay, they're off today. So it is going to be a longer wait to find out really how long both Thompson and Samuelson potentially could be out, because I know it's more they're still doing the quote-unquote testing, which, man, Paul, for Buffalo sports, it feels like we're not getting, like, anything definitive on, like, anybody that's hurt. It's killing me. Like, does Cooper have a broken hand? Why is he wearing the cast? What is – and Coleman, I have no idea. Oh, it's frustrating.
Yeah, that's the way pro sports rolls. They just, and the NHL is worse because the NHL can get away with lower body and upper body. In the NFL, they actually have to say the injury. But look at Hurts this past week. Apparently, Sirianni slipped. They said, "Oh no, just he's resting. He's fine." And then I guess from what I read, he slipped, and they had to put him on the injury report. Obviously, they hadn't planned on putting him on the injury report.
They were not planning on that at all.
So they're still playing games in the NFL. That should cost the Eagles. That is not the way the injuries are supposed to work. I don't know if it will or it won't, but they were hiding an injury and got caught.
Yeah. And then you have the opposite end, Baltimore, where every week Lamar Jackson's on the injury report for something. And it's like, no, he's actually fine. We just kind of want to give him a rest day. It's exhausting, Paul. It is exhausting trying to keep up with teams. And then you're right.
Remember,
in the
Belichick
NHL.
Would put like 27 guys on the injury report because he got caught. So it was like half of the 53-man roster was on the injury report.
A man ahead of his time, because now the Bills have what, like 19 guys on there? A man ahead of his time. All right, Paul, thank you so much for jumping on with us. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, take care.
That was Paul Hamilton. His sports on WGR, brought to you by Equitable Advisors, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Raylax Honda. Raylax, we got this. And yeah, oh man, just keeping up with the injuries is just a nightmare and a half to just deal with, because you never really know when anyone is actually hurt, if they're going to be out long term. They got rid of probable too, which, I mean, I get it. You weren't really going to use it that much. But, I mean, that's where you also look at Amari Cooper, who has been limited and questionable for 2 weeks, and he's not playing. So, I don't know. It's a small gripe. It's a first world problem. I get it. But it's still something that frustrates the you-know-what out of me. Going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we'll get back to some of your tweets as well on sort of the question of the day, that being, has this year's regular season matchup with the Chiefs lost all of its luster, or is it still the quote-unquote game of the year contender for you? We've had a lot of fun kind of jumping around with that. A lot of people, including myself, really, it's the playoffs, baby. That's what it matters. The regular season is just, well, the regular season. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Josh, we got Maction tonight.
You are so excited.
We got the championship classic in college basketball. That was the Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky, Duke. that match. Very excited for that. Mm-hmm. Going to be glued into that. I thought though I'd have to wait a little bit for some sports tonight. Like, I'd have that at 6:30, but I'm still here, so I'm kind of watching that, like, on the TV while I'm still working. 9 o'clock, all right, cool. Kentucky Duke, I'm there. Nay, nay, sir. 7 o'clock, you be hosting Ball State on a Tuesday. It's action, baby. That's the joys of college football right there. That's the pageantry. That's the tradition. Mac football on a Tuesday night, Ball State at UB. UB 5-4, by the way. Very good year for them. I was able to go to one game this year. They ultimately lost, but it was really fun being at UB and seeing a game. I hadn't been in years. I used to have season tickets when I was a little kid growing up. Fun game, though, ultimately against Western Michigan. Refs kind of, you know, screwed them a little bit at the end. We won't talk about it. It's fine. They blew out Akron, though, the other week. They made it a game kind of late, but what have you. Then they had the bye week. Now Ball State. They win tonight. They're 5-4. They win tonight. They are bowl eligible. And after kind of having two pretty cruddy seasons coming into this year, for Pete Lembo's first year to be bowl eligible for a program like UB, who, I mean, we've recently had some success with that, but overall they have not, would be, I think, a massive win. Again, that game's going to be at 7 o'clock. For radio purposes, going to be on our sister station, The Bet 1520, but also on television, CBS Sports. Should be a lot of fun there. Can't wait. I'm definitely going to check out that game 100%. Get back some tweets here, though. Talking about the Chiefs-Bills matchup this week. It's only Tuesday. We really don't have many storylines, per se, on this game up to this point, outside of the fact for the Bills, Keon Coleman, we know, is out. And on those wide receivers, Michael tweets in, right now with Cooper and Coleman, the Chiefs aren't any better at wide receiver than we are. They have a better tight end if Kincaid doesn't play. I think even if Kincaid plays, they have a better tight end. But let's get healthy. Bye week is next, and then we get a banged up Mahomes looking bad. Mahomes is weird, too, because, I mean, he's picked up ankle injuries, like, every game this year, but has not missed any game time. I mean, Allen has a hand injury. He's still getting treatment about it, so he's still on the injury report, or we'll see this week. I'd like to make him look bad. I want to win this game, though. I'd love for them to go to 9-2 and actually have a fight for the one seed, but in terms of, am I going to be excited and think, like, this is the year they're going to win the Super Bowl just because they beat the Chiefs in the regular season? No. I will feel that way, though, Josh. If they beat them in the playoffs, I will fully be there. It doesn't matter like what round it is. It could be in the divisional round, wild card round. I mean, unlikely. But it could be in any of those rounds. I don't care. I would feel like this is the year. This is the time. They've gotten that monkey off their back. And maybe it's not 100% right to like fully put all my energy into if they beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. I think it's the year. But that's sort of where I'm at. I don't think the Bengals are what they were 2 years ago. I simply don't. I think the Bills can handle the Bengals today. I really, really do. Especially if both teams were healthy. I think absolutely.
I think I'm at the point where I just want to play the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game rather than the divisional game. Because
oh, yeah, that's fair. That's
because
fair.
The divisional game, it's like, yeah, great. You beat them. Let's say that happens. Let's say last year the Chiefs or the Bills beat the Chiefs, right? Then they have to go on and play Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's this year, you know, let's say the Texans go on some crazy run and all of a sudden become great again.
Yeah.
And Nico Collins comes back and CJ Stroud looks like he did last year or even better.
I even would argue. I think CJ Stroud actually looked pretty good this year.
Oh, yeah. It's just.
I think the real person that has lost a lot of their luster, Bobby Slowick.
Mm hmm.
He went from like him and Ben Johnson. They're the two.
Ben Johnson is miles ahead of him now.
And I would argue Slowick is not good. At least this year, he has not been great.
He's just doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm hmm.
And people are starting to catch on. Ben Johnson kind of adapted.
He's a witch.
Added. Well, right. It's like taking the blinders off. You have, oh, look, here's all this stuff. Oh, there's all this other stuff. Oh, okay. Great. Cool. Now we have to defend that. But back to, you know, the whole playoff matchup thing. I just would rather play them in the game before the Super Bowl. Play them as late as you possibly can. Just because of how much it's going to take to beat them potentially.
And I've also been somebody for 21 after 13 seconds.
Yeah.
I've now looked at that year. It's still painful. It's less so for me because I now look at that Bengals team, who the Bills then had struggles with the next 2 years,
mm-hmm.
beating them and having a really bad matchup. And ultimately, well, yes, it took a historically bad performance by Mahomes in the second half for the Bengals to come back.
Right.
I can't say that'd be the same situation for the Bills in Orchard Park.
Right.
And so like I've looked at that a little bit differently, and I think you're right. Like it's like, no, get them in the AFC Championship game so that the next step is the Super Bowl rather than you beat them in the division round. It's like, you know, we're all excited, but then it's like, oh, but we have the AFC Championship game against, you know, for argument's sake, Baltimore.
Right. And that's the thing. Like this year I think it'll be the top three that are, you know, in conversation for the Super Bowl or just the AFC Championship is Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore. The Texans will be there. If the Steelers keep this going, they're going to definitely enter that conversation.
They're so cool.
It's just...
I hate them so much.
But they're definitely going to enter that conversation if they keep this going. And if the Bengals can somehow turn it around and continue whatever it is they have going on there, then they're obviously still going to be there. And that's a team that I really don't want to face. That's one of my biggest fears is the Bengals make it to the wild card round and the Bills have to play
the Bills have to play them.
Because that's a team, like we were talking about a few weeks ago with the Steelers, of they're one of those teams where you just don't want to play them in the playoffs in. Because they're going to beat you, and then they're going to get killed the next week.
I'll take them. Their defense is bad.
It is. But their offense is still really good. Ja'Marr Chase has gone through whatever he went through, and he's back.
Yeah.
And Joe Burrow is...
He's been there the whole year.
He's still been there, yeah. But I look at what is in front of the Bills, and if you can just wait until the last possible minute to have to play the Chiefs, playing the Ravens in the AFC Championship game is my worst nightmare. Because you've played the Chiefs there. You've basically beaten them in a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
13 seconds is 13 seconds away from a win.
Yeah.
Like that's the hardest part to look at that season is you're 13 seconds away from going to the championship game against the Bengals. But sure, you've beaten the Ravens in the playoffs, but you beat the 2021 Ravens in the playoffs. Or 2020 Ravens in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That was a completely different team than what they have now of the two-headed monster of Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
I want another shot at him so bad. That defense
I do
is
too.
Abysmal.
I do too.
It's why
I don't want to see Derrick Henry ruin our hopes and dreams in the AFC Championship game.
He's my one issue. It's not even Lamar. My one issue is Henry because that defense, I think, is atrocious for both them and the Bengals and why I'd be comfortable playing them.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually, the last few weeks, I've gotten more to, I actually don't want to play the Steelers.
Right.
I don't like what they've got going on as an AFC fan.
Because they have T.J. Watt on defense, which he's just a game wrecker. And then you also have Russell Wilson remembering how to play football.
He's more just throwing up prayer balls to Mike Williams and George Pickens. The problem is they're coming down with him.
Right, right. And it's so funny that Mike Williams is just going off.
Apparently good again.
I love it. He was never bad. Aaron Rodgers is bad.
Pickens' touchdown, too, against Washington.
Mm-hmm.
The way he moved his body to get in that position. Phenomenal. And you know what, though? I think it did take that win for me. Them beating Washington for me to be I think the Pittsburgh Steelers might be legit.
Well, because Washington's pretty legit. I mean,
I think they are.
A team that you thought, they offloaded three generational linemen on their defense, 2 years, 1 year ago, 2 years ago? When they
It's been within this run, yeah.
They traded Montez Sweat and Chase Young away. And then
Jonathan Allen's the only one still there.
And then they draft Jaden Daniels, and you're like, well, that's going to be a fun project for the next few years. And he's good right away. Cool. Great. And their defense is somehow still good. The big thing, too, was
they didn't even get the right coach. It was supposed to be you get Ben Johnson, and now all of a sudden you're going to have this, wunderkind at head coach in the offensive mind with Jaden Daniels. It'd be great. And then it was like, oh, no. You get Dan Quinn. Remember when he was last DC? Oh, yeah. Green Bay slaughtered the Cowboys on national television. Children were crying. That was your last image of Dan Quinn. I mean, the vibes were kind of low outside of the fact that they changed their owner. And now, obviously, the year's begun, and it's in earnest. They've been really, really good up to this point.
All of this conversation is not going to matter anyway, because whoever gets to the Super Bowl is going to get just stomped by the Lions. I'm fully prepared for
that. Jared Goff throws 5 picks, they win a game. That's disgusting.
I know. That's what I'm saying. They're unbeatable. They're the team that should be undefeated.
I'm looking
Why
at it
are
now.
The Lions...
I'm gonna have to adjust my mandate of heaven rankings. the Chiefs are on there.
Yeah. The Lions
Jared
are
Jared Goff
the Lions
threw 5
are
picks and they've
the
won
list.
A game. Yeah. And they've also won the last few weeks off of defensive touchdowns, special teams touchdowns, and they've
and
blown
Jake Bates
teams out. Yeah.
Going from a USFL kicker to just NFL legend.
Yeah.
I drafted him this year in a league in the last round because you gotta take a kicker. And everyone's like, why are you taking the Lions kicker? I'm like, because this dude just nails everything.
Yep.
67 yarders, not a problem.
I'll put my top 20. I'll put my top 5 Mandate of Heaven rankings, I think, after this for the NFL.
Yeah?
I'm debating now between who is it, Detroit or Kansas City is one.
The Steelers are up there.
The Steelers are going to be up there. Detroit's going to be there. Kansas City's going to be there.
San Francisco?
Nope.
Really?
They've had a tough year. It'd be one thing if they were kept winning games and they were hurt. Tough year.
Wait, are we basing it off this season or?
This season, yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, if we're basing it off history, San Francisco should definitely be in that conversation because they go to every single Super Bowl and just lose.
Yeah.
That's their whole thing.
Might just be those three teams. I mean, there's no – then we're getting into, like, players. Yeah. Travis Kelce, probably.
Yeah, I guess.
He's up there.
No, just keep it to teams, I think. And
Minnesota.
For this season – I was going to say, for this season, you could put Minnesota in there. Could you put Green Bay in there? Or is that just good coaching?
I mean, Minnesota could arguably be good coaching.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who else there would be. The Falcon? No.
No. That's just good vibes. That's all that is.
If you're doing
good vibes.
If you're doing the absolute inverse of this, it would be like the Jaguars and the Cowboys.
And like, the Bears.
The exact opposite of Bears. What you expect them to be and expect them to do. And all the goodness and glory that you can see them getting. And it's just tank.
Just so bad. Just so bad. The Bears. Shane Waldron fired.
Yeah, that's something.
Caleb Williams, 9 sacks. Against the Patriots. And I think it was Tim Hasselbeck yesterday on Colin Cowherd's show said he's like, yeah, a lot of those sacks are on quarterbacks. They are. He's like, I'd probably put 6 of them on Caleb. And I'm like, that's still so many.
Right.
Still
right.
So many.
And then the fact that his offensive line doesn't help him off the ground. I mean, that's a bad look.
I mean, I saw something. I think the Barstool guys for Chicago brought this up too, of like, this is the Mahomes theory, like living itself out, which for Chicago fan or for people that don't know, it's a Chicago thing that, it didn't matter if we took Mitch Trubisky to match Mahomes. They both would have been bad here.
Oh, okay.
And it was always, obviously, a theory. You would never know. Mahomes goes to Kansas City. Mitch Trubisky goes to Chicago. They're all saying, like, no, we're figuring it out now.
This is the exact thing that would have happened.
They got DJ Moore. They've got Roma Dunze. But they are still the Chicago Bears. So they've still got a defensive coach. They've still got that mindset. And Caleb Williams looks terrible. And he does. And I think that's, look, does he have moments? Yes. But for the most part, he has not looked good at all. And then I think that game, or the last few games, but really the Patriots game was maybe the magnum opus of terribleness.
I still think the best possible scenario for this offseason, for the most drama and the most success for next year, please, Ben Johnson, go to Chicago.
Well, yeah, because then as just a neutral NFL please. Fan, I'm like, the NFC North is paradise.
Just, yeah.
Like, I
well,
just,
no,
I
not
watch
even
it.
That. I want the rivalries. I
oh,
mean,
yeah.
A
you already have some of the older rivalries anyway. Like
right.
Chicago, Green Bay is already a standing rivalry.
Right.
Now, yeah, you would have Chicago and Detroit of like Detroit fans going like, you betrayed us.
Yeah.
Like we knew you were going to leave, but really
and
to the Bears?
Well, I mean, there's already kind of a rivalry there anyway, just because of the divisional aspect.
Oh, yeah.
But
you add on to it.
But
there's another chapter
to
the story.
Of your offensive coordinator like pulling the biggest 180 ever and not going to Washington.
So good.
And being like, hey, I'll stay with you guys. Psych, we just won a Super Bowl. I'm going to go to Chicago and play with Caleb Williams.
So like, good. The sting will be gone if they win a Super Bowl.
Mm.
If they go to the Super Bowl and lose and then he leaves, it is a hell of an offseason.
Yeah. That's the dream.
Yep. 803-0550 is the number to call. Going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. Get you ready for Sabres Live.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
At the top of the hour, this is WGR. Welcome back, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. So we've tweeted out the top 5, the NFL Mandate of Heaven rankings through week 10. I now kind of want to make this a weekly thing. Because I feel good about this. Because I throw it out there a lot for certain teams. I feel good about this. So for those that don't know, the Mandate of Heaven is a thing from ancient China. That's what allowed dynasties to rule. It was divine intervention, essentially. That's where I'm at with this rankings. This is clearly divine intervention is playing into what the team is this year.
Think of angels in the outfield.
Bingo. Thank you.
Plays that are happening that you can't explain why they're happening. Like the one scene from Angels in the Outfield where the outfielder is diving for a ball he's not going to catch, and then he just swoops in and catches it.
And that's what him.
That's what you think about. Think about the Kansas City block from this past week as if it was Angels in the Outfield.
So with that, the rankings, we're going to go from the bottom to the top. At five, we have Green Bay. Jordan Love has not been playing that well this year, and even when he is, he's not even on the field half the time. They've had Malik Willis going in, and yet they're still 6-3. You can argue that's good coaching, sure, but we need top five, and Green Bay, I think, finds their way on this list there. Honorable mention, because Josh, me and you were talking in this, we had Arizona. Arizona's good, but they're not great. Green Bay feels like a team that like is still taking that next step, even though they're not particularly playing that well on offense.
Right.
They're getting just enough out of it.
Even though they paid Jordan Love stupid money, and then Malik Willis is winning them games.
I'm still okay with it, though. I'm a big fan of Jordan Love.
That's
number
fair.
Four, Atlanta. Kirk Cousins is quarterback.
Big Kirkle wakes up like this. That's all I got to say.
I mean, that's kind of what it is. I mean, you have Atlanta with Kirk Cousins winning games. They drafted Michael Penix Jr. The vibes were absolutely terrible there. They got the bonus of an atrocious division, even though the Saints started off the year looking like the hottest team in football to only lose seven straight. Carolina's in the division. That can only be brought to you by higher power having Carolina in your division. And then, along with all of that, they are a plus 2 point differential at 6-4. That is not good football, and yet they are 6-4. Number three, Pittsburgh. Do I even have to talk about it? Mike Tomlin is yet to have a losing season, and Russell Wilson goes from basically not being able to play any kind of good football to now he is throwing up prayer balls, divine intervention, to George Pickens and Mike Williams, and it's working. They are scoring on offense at a really good pop.
There was an account on social media two years ago, his first year in Denver,
mm-hmm.
and they were keeping track of how many days it took for Russell Wilson to have more touchdowns thrown than bathrooms in his house. He has 12 bathrooms in his house.
That's too many.
12.
That's too many.
Reportedly, apparently.
And on that point, they are 4 points better in point differential than Baltimore. They're at 7-2. Baltimore's at 7-3. The difference is Baltimore scored over 100 points more than them, 318 to 215. And
Whoa.
Yet, there they are at 7-2.
Wait.
They were winning games with Justin Fields. They're winning games with Russell Wilson, 7-2. And I think now at this point, too, after the win against Washington, we got to start taking them seriously.
That point differential, that...
It's fun, isn't it?
That doesn't make sense. I don't understand how that maths.
So good. On to the top two. We previewed it at the end of the last segment, and here it is. Detroit is at number two. Really, for them, they're a good team ascending. They're entirely on this list for the sheer fact that Jared Goff threw 5 interceptions and they won a football game.
Yeah, this is definitely like a weekly thing. It's not like the whole like year.
Because Detroit has been flew up
very good.
Detroit is very good, but again,
this past week,
Goff threw 5 interceptions and they won.
And their field goal kicker, again, Jake Bates, amazing,
mm-hmm.
makes 2 incredible field goals.
They barely
makes them.
I will say, like, Detroit likely is off this list next week. They are, I think, the most complete team in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Their
yeah,
point differential,
for sure.
113. They've scored 284 points. They've only given up 171. 8-1. They look like the class of the NFC.
Another team that's hopefully off this list next week is number one.
Kansas City, probably not. They will still likely be on this list, at least even just a little bit. You can't go from one to off the list. Kansas City's at one. I mean, how many times are going to have to go through these one-score games? I heard Joe losing his mind about it, too, where it just seems like they're like 50-0 in one-score games. It's just absurd. And again, this time, too. But Denver does everything they needed to do to set up an easy chip shot field goal for the win. And what happens? Their left guard completely falls down, and it's a blocked field goal for Kansas City. It is absurd. They're not playing great football. Everyone else around them is just playing poorly. And it's frustrating as all you know what. Even their, I mean, you look at their stats too. Their point differential is plus 58. The Chargers are 10 points more than them at plus 68. And they've only scored 186 points, Josh. They haven't even scored 200 yet. Kansas City has scored 219, and they're still 10 points below that point differential for Kansas City or for the Chargers. They keep winning games. They're 9-0. It's absolutely absurd. I can't stand it. It's frustrating the hell out of me, man. But they go to number one, really, until further notice, because if they beat – honestly, they beat Buffalo, we all know something fluky's happening.
What if they lose to the Bills?
Like, just lose?
Yeah, like, it's not –
they'll be third.
It's not a close game, but it's also not like a blowout.
They'll be third.
Yeah, because something stupid will probably still happen in the game.
Well, and also this is through week 10. Up to this point, this is our first time doing it, but we're going weeks here.
Mm-hmm.
They've had their moments before this. Isaiah Likely grew up to have size 12 sneakers. instead of size 11. Jamar Chase inexplicably, randomly loses his mind over a not really missed call for an official to the point where he draws a penalty himself. They've had a lot of these moments here. But yeah, that's our NFL mandate of heaven rankings through week 10. It's going to do it for me and Josh. We'll be back on tomorrow. Coming up next, though, after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. This is WGR.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.